this word. He said, the Lord told me to tell you that he's more comfortable with your humanity than you are. I understand your humanity, Jim, and I'm comfortable with it. My grace is sufficient. Woo, that yoked me right with the Lord. Do you understand? It corrected me. It brought me to the standard, but it took all the pressure off. It sustained me. That's why it's important, if we're going to have a disciple's tongue, to know the right word to say. Amen. Isaiah 54, and you don't have to turn there, but in the King James, it says, know how to speak a word in season, is what the King James says. Not only do we need to identify the right word, but we need to identify the right time to give that word. It's not only what we say that's important, but it's when we say it. It's a seasonal word. You've got to say not only the right word, but you've got to wait for the right time to say it, because it's with the right word and the right time that will sustain. That's very important, that a disciple's tongue knows when to say the word. Sometimes we get a word and it seems right, and without even asking the Lord when to say it, we just run right off because it's revelation. The Lord told me to tell you this. And it ends up putting more pressure on than helping, because we didn't seek him. Say, all right, Lord, I got the word now. Why, now, when do you want me to say it? John had been knowing about my lack of dressing for a long time. He's been at our house where Diane and I, he comes in with things, and Diane and I are in our sweats, you know, just bumming around, and he didn't say anything then. He brought it at a time, the setting was right, there was businessmen all over the place, there were some of the pastors flying in for this conference, we're all coming there, and it was obvious. I stood out like everybody else, and here I was. It was the right word at the right time. Diane wasn't there. I was in the airport. It was the right word at the right time. And it's very important. My other pastor, the before John, was Bill McLaughlin. And this was a year and a half ago. And he wanted to deal with me about the fact that my wife was starving for affection. I don't want to embarrass Diane in this, but it was... But he was there for weeks and everything, and he chose on the time we got to the airport. It was just a timely time, and he started speaking this to me. And it was the right word at the right time, and it sustained me. And it helped us. It helped us, because I was letting ministry take precedent over marriage. John, and Bill told me, he said, Jim, without a marriage, you have no ministry. I said, oh. It wasn't that I didn't love Diane, it's just that I was doing more for the ministry than I was doing for my marriage. And it corrected me. You please forgive me for using myself as an example, but I know me better than anybody else. And so I know some of yours too, but I haven't asked you if I could use it yet. Let me just read some scriptures to you. You don't have to turn there. Job 6:25 says this, how forcible are seasonal words. That the right word at the right time is forcible. How forcible are seasonal words? And that's from the Moffat translation. Other one says right words, which in the Hebrew means right in every respect. Proverbs 15:23 says, a man has joy in an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word. That a timely word brings delight. It does. I stand before you this morning delighted about the word. I wasn't delighted then. I'm delighted now about the word. Proverbs 25 and verse 11 says, like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in the right circumstance. The right circumstance. You wait for the right timing to speak the word. John 16:12, when he was talking to his disciples, he makes this very powerful statement. He says, I have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them right now. He's saying, I've got other things, but and the right words, but it's just not right time to say them. OK, Okay, it's not the right circumstances. But then he goes on in verse 13, he says, but the Spirit of truth, when he comes, he'll guide you in all truth. He'll say the right word at the right time. Okay? Then let's turn over to Ephesians 4. Ephesians, the fourth chapter. I just want you to see this one yourself. And out of the New American Standard, it says this, verse 29. It says, let no unwholesome word or corrupt word or unhealthy word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification. That means it's the right word according to the need of the moment. It means you say the right word for that need in that moment. How many of you, the Lord told you to tell somebody something and you didn't tell them and you lived regret to tell them? To regret it. And you couldn't say it then because the circumstances had passed, the need of the moment had passed, and it wouldn't have done any good to say it then. And all you can do is pray that another moment or set of circumstances the Lord will... How many know that the Lord's orchestrating a lot of things in our lives? And He's trying to line different things up. The only problem is He's got to use us with our will. Son, would you do that? Well, passed it up. All right, maybe next time, you know. But because He's got to use us. And I regret it. That's why we need to be sensitive to say the right word where it says here, it says to the need of the moment that it may give grace. Give grace to those who hear. All our words ought to give grace. And grace is simply this. Getting what we don't deserve. That you're sitting there weary because you're thinking you deserve this and the Lord gives you a word to show you, yeah, you deserve that, but I'm not going to give you that. I'm going to give you this. And all of a sudden, woo! Amen? And thirdly and last, let's turn over to 2 Samuel. Not only do we need to identify the right word, not only do we need to identify the right time, but we need to identify the right attitude to say it in. It's not only what we say that's important, it's not only when we say it, but it's also how we say something that is very, very important. 2 Samuel 18, verses 1 through 5, I just want to bring out a little truth here. And then David numbered the people who were with him and set over them commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds. And David sent the people out, one third under the command of Joab, one third under the command of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one third under the command of Ittai, the Gittite. I hope I said those things right. And the king said to the people, I myself will surely go out with you. But the people said, you should not go out, for if we indeed flee, they will not care about us. Even if half of us die, they will not care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us. Therefore, now it is better that you be ready to help us from the city. Then the king said to them, whatever seems best to you, I will do. So the king stood beside the gate, and all the people went out by hundreds and thousands. And the king charged Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. Deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. This is a story where King David's son rebelled against his father and took a portion of his kingdom. They made him king and he was trying to take over the kingdom. David left Jerusalem and now his mighty men are going out and they're going to try to deal with this situation. Now Absalom, his son, is the one that did it all. But David said to him, he said, now I'm sending you out to do a work, but I want you to deal gently. I want you to feel how I feel about this man, Absalom. And I want you to do not only what I say, but I want you to do it in the way that I would do it. Deal gently with him for my sake. Capture my heart for him. Just don't do the words of what I'm saying. Catch the spirit of what I'm saying and deal with it accordingly. It's not only what we say, when we say it, but it's how we say something. What he was asking his men is he wanted his men to feel the way he felt toward Absalom. It's easier to do what somebody tells you than it is to feel the way they feel about it. When we first came to Orlando, before coming down and scouting out the land, I came down ahead of time, and we had a dog back then named Scroungy. Doberman Pinscher. Beautiful little dog. We got it while we were dating, and that dog meant a lot with it. It slept in our house. I mean, it slept in the same bed with me. I mean, we loved that dog. And I came down. Everywhere I went, this dog went with me. He was man's best friend. I loved this dog. And we went down to a friend's house here in Orlando, and he had a Doberman Pinscher pup. And he said, Jim, why don't you let Scroungy stay here with me? Because I was coming back the next day with Diane, and I'll watch him. And I said, okay. And I said, but listen. And I sat there, and I told him, I said, brother, I said, I love this dog. It's like a son to me. You know, please deal with it. And he said, okay. But that night, he put the dog outdoors with his, out where there was nothing, and storm came up. Rain came down, lightning came up, and Scroungy dug a hole under the fence and ran away. I spent 3 weeks every day coming down here searching the streets for that dog. But he never caught what I said to him when I told him this is like, and he was in our house. He knows how we treated that dog. Now, he was willing to do something, but he wasn't willing to do it the way I would have done it. And he had my property. Do you understand? How many of you know that you belong to the Lord? And if I deal with you, I've got to deal with you the way He would deal with you. Not the way I would deal with you. You're His property. And if He's given me something to do in your life, then I need to hear how He feels about you. And not only with His words, but with His feelings, deal with you. And the Lord's saying, deal gently with them, Jim, for my sake. How many of you know that the Lord always deals with us gently? Even when He's harsh, it's in a gentle way. And we need to deal with one another accordingly. Receiving communication and instruction depends not only on doing what you're told, but on the ability to feel the same way about the instruction as the one who gives it. I'm saying this because while I'm away, David Hornsby has volunteered to do my yard. And I love that yard. That yard sleeps with me. I mean, no, I do. I never let anybody touch my yard except in the wintertime. That's one of the first times I ever let anybody deal with my yard. You know, so he needs to feel about it. He doesn't need to do that yard the way he would do his. He needs to do the yard the way I would do it. Okay? Now, I'm not saying that to put any pressure on him. We've already talked about this, but it's an example. If you come over and want to bless me, or if I come over to your house and want to bless you and say, I'm going to clean your house, I don't need to come. How many of you see? A clean floor to one person could be a dirty floor to another. And would it bless you if you cleaned it just any old way? I mean, you need to find out how they feel about that. Well, how do you clean it? How do you cook? And then deal with it according to the way that person feels. It's not simply enough to obey God. He wants us to learn about it the way He does. Let's turn over to Colossians, last scripture, Colossians 4. Colossians, the fourth chapter. What the Lord is asking from us in this whole area of correcting one another, because you need to be, encouragement brings with it gentleness. I mean, when you're encouraged, somebody already brings gentleness. One of the requirements for a leader in the church, it says over in 1 Timothy, is that he be gentle. One of the fruits of the Spirit is gentleness. You understand? That's one of the fruits of the Spirit, that a leader needs to be gentle. What God is asking of us is deeper than mere obedience. He's asking us to receive an impartation of His Spirit, His attitude. Colossians 4 and verse 6 says, let your speech always, not sometimes, always be seasoned with grace, seasoned as it were with salt, so that you may know how you should respond to each person. Doesn't say anything about the word, what word, or when to say it. It says here, how to respond. You need to season your speech with grace. With, yes, they may deserve this, but grace is not giving them what they deserve, but giving them what they don't deserve. Gentleness. Did you ever notice how you may talk, and I've been painfully aware of this, and I'm trying to deal with it. But did you ever notice how you talk to other people's children different than you talk to your own? Now, some of you may not be that way, but I'm not as gentle with other people's children or as graceful with other people's children as I am my own. Because what I do with mine comes filtered through my heart as a father for them. I make allowances for my children that I don't make for other people's children. That's wrong. But I'm saying that this is where we need to change. I need to treat your children not the way I would, but the way you would. I need to look at them with your love and the value you place on them. Because that's how the Lord looks at you. That's how you're the child of the living God. I need to deal with you gently for His sake. Because I didn't die for you. He thought enough of you to die for you. To be nailed to a cross. I got to keep that in mind. When the Lord gives me a word for you that may be hard, I need to keep it in mind, not only for the right time, but how, Lord, should I say this? Sit there and let my speech be seasoned with grace. And the only way you can do that is sit down and think how valuable you are to the Lord. Let's don't say things based on our feelings. Let's say them based on the feelings of the one whom we serve. A disciple's tongue will say the right word at the right time. In closing, let me say this. In the Lord's kingdom, there may be many people that we don't like, and even a few that we might want to put the sword to. Bob Mumford said there's always one in the congregation that the pastor wouldn't mind helping on the glory. Don't laugh, you're it. No. But the Lord is saying to us, for my sake, be gentle with them. Don't hurt them. Sustain them. Give them rest. Let's not ever cause God to weep over some Absalom that we've unleashed our feelings on. Because what happened in that story is Joab found Absalom stuck in a tree. The guy that found him first was a servant, and he wouldn't touch him. Joab came up and said, kill him. And he said, no. He said, though I die 1,000 deaths, I'll never kill him. And Joab took the sword and killed him. I don't ever want to be guilty of causing God to weep over some Absalom that I had the right word for and it was the right time, but I didn't say it in the right way. Let's stand.